You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, July 26, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Biden administration appears to be about to extend the student debt repayment moratorium. Meanwhile, former Pence chief of staff and his top lawyer, the one he met with Eastman with the day before January 6th, appears in front of a federal grand jury investigating that very day. Meanwhile, Russia to quit the International Space Station in 2024 as Europe begins to ration gas in anticipation of Russia cutting off supplies. Sandy Hook parents testify today against Alex Jones as a jury will determine what award they will give the plaintiffs. For Jones has already proved defamation over Sandy Hook. In the Pacific Northwest, today could be the hottest day of this massive heat wave. Protests at Indiana State House as an abortion ban is being debated and sure to come. Joe Biden proposes a regulation to protect LGBTQ health care under the ACA. Federal immigration judges filing to recertify their union, finally, a year and a half after Trump, the administration, had decertified it. Meanwhile, a possible national railroad strike is looming. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Sam.
How are you?
I am well.
What do you look like? What you like? You was there some joke that was going on?
No, I'm happy to be here. Was that okay?
That's weird.
I think we're all energized by the by conflict.
That's true. That's true.
Well, someone here certainly is. You definitely. I think you get energy off of it.
I do. I actually do.
I get anxiety, but when it's other people involved in conflict, I'm very much in enjoy. And also, it's contagious. When you get into a conflict, now it like gives me more confidence to get into more conflict. So
I get when I see other people involved in conflict, I just get a little bit jealous. That's about
it. That's FOMO.
Yeah. That's not 100% true. I'm not inviting any of this, but in the fun half, we will save it for the fun half. We'll get some other sort of more relevant news. But I got a DM for the first time in a couple of years from somebody who I used to count as a pretty good friend, Matt Taibbi, asking me about a tweet that I had done when it was announced that Glenn Greenwald would be doing a Q&A with Alex Jones as a way of promoting a documentary about Alex Jones. Mm. And I think my tweet was just, you know, more like, and that's a wrap. Like as if Glenn Greenwald had come to the end of an era. And we were really all done.
And after watching the Q&A, you were right.
And to be fair, I prejudged the Q&A because I do think that, yes, like, I understand it's one thing to interview people. It's another thing to interview them on your show.
Yeah.
But I've worked in film. I know how this works at a film festival. You don't do that Q&A afterwards because we're going to do a hard-hitting piece of journalism. You do it because it's promotional. That's why it's out there on, and they were going to put it on Rumble. It is a promotional piece.
It's like Comic-Con, but for right-wing conspiracy.
Alex was, like, thanking him at the end for doing it. Like, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. I'm sure he thanked him beforehand, too. But I did not realize how naked it would be. I honestly thought that at least he's going to do one question, and that didn't happen. Anyways, so I thought Matt was just reaching out to me. And was actually, and then it turns out by the end, I realized like, oh, he's not responding. And he's pursuing some line of questions about the documentary, asking if I had seen it. It's not released. Of course I haven't seen it. And I wasn't commenting on the documentary. People can make documentaries. I think there's probably been 10 documentaries about Alex Jones, as far as I know. I don't know. But I was talking about the Q&A. Anyways. Yeah, see, you got me. None of this was even going to talk about at all.
How this all started is because I was smiling.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
lesson learned.
Yeah,
and it's my fault.
Do better next time.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyways, we'll talk about this and the thing is, we'll talk about it later because, you know, I'm very curious as to how Matt will characterize that. If he's smart, he'll leave me out of the piece because it doesn't, nothing that I did purported to promote at least the theme he seemed to be going for, which of course is liberal elites don't understand Alex Jones. I got news for you. I've been listening to Alex Jones before I don't even think Matt Taibbi was back in the country when I was listening to Alex Jones. And yes, I have friends. I've talked to people who listen to Alex Jones. I don't talk to them as much anymore because Alex Jones got them into David Icke's. And now they're convinced that I'm part lizard because I'm Jew.
Yeah.
All right. So that's why, to the extent that I don't talk. And I've listened to more Art Bell. And I've listened to more George Nuri. And all of it. All of it. Than any of these people combined.
Coast to coast AM.
Exactly. Anybody wants to go and talk to me about a radio host? I'm misjudging Alex Jones. It's true. He was skeptical about the NSA. And he also thinks there's a weather machine. You know what that is? Honestly, and I've said this a decade ago, I said this. More. If Alex Jones didn't exist, the CIA would have to create him. His critique of the NSA was undermined by the fact that he believes there's a weather machine or whatever, or there's the Bilderberger group, or that there are lizards, or that they're one world. This is exactly the type of misinformation you would want. That if you were the NSA, you were the CIA, you were whatever agency, and you didn't want reasonable people to critique it, you would send Alex Jones out there to take legitimate critique of the CIA and combine it with people having controlling the world from, you know, as they do chants with owls at the Bilderberger group or whatever.
And his handsome good looks, you forgot to mention.
And so, you know, the idea that you can cherry pick things that Alex Jones said that were legitimate. And this is a reason to promote this guy, and make no mistake about it. Promotion, period.
Yeah. That Obama's a Muslim.
And he's some type of martyr because he was booted off of YouTube? Give me an effing break. He can go back onto radio. All right. That's not what I had planned to start.
Anyway, here's the news. I said that handsome thing because that was an opening question to a question in that Q&A.
I just like...
You are so handsome,
you know,
Alex.
What happened was that... Yeah, I know. It was crazy.
Unbelievable.
I guess I was just mad because I thought like, oh, Taibbi's reaching out. Okay, good. We can patch things up. But it was more like three or four exchanges back and forth. I'm like, are you right? Is this are you asking me this for a piece you're writing? And it turns out,
whoops.
And so, I don't know, maybe I'll do a piece. Because, you know, there's been things that Taibbi has said about this show that are, I can prove, are inaccurate. So, If we're really going to go into like, oh, look at this tweet. It shows so much. That can work both ways. Anyways.
Do you have a fifth wind? You good?
Okay. All right. Somebody needs to get me some CBD. All right. Let's go with this first. Okay. This will make me feel a little bit better. As you remember, Emma, back in the day, when the Alito's draft of his brief was leaked in, what was it, in March or May?
It was like, yeah, it was a May, April, something like that. Jeez, time is just, okay. It's hard to judge.
And
I think it was May.
And there has been reporting. Now, supposedly there's an investigation ongoing. And my prediction was if they found that it was a liberal, from the liberal side, that we would hear about that before the decision was announced. If we didn't, then we may never hear about it because it's a conservative. We haven't heard anything about it, but there is new reporting as to the implications of that leak. Now, this is not reporting as to the intentions of that leak. It is simply reporting as to what the leak actually caused. But 2 + 2 + 2 = 6. And I will go through those twos in a moment. This is new reporting. And the other interesting thing is the vote was taken in December. It's a preliminary vote. There's time, obviously, to change people's minds, but that's what was going on. There was a lot of lobbying going on when that brief was leaked. Here is a report from a CNN reporter. What's her name? Joan Biskupic.
Yeah. Biskupic, yeah.
Biskupic. And I'm quite sure her sources on the Supreme Court are about as close to John Roberts as you can get. That may include being John Roberts, but here it is.
Joining us to share her fascinating new reporting here is CNN legal analyst Joan Biskupic. Joan, tell us how hard he was fighting to bring some folks over to his side.
Morning, Brianna and John. Extremely hard. He was trying week after week after the initial vote in December, after oral arguments, in which five of the justices on the far right voted to overturn Roe. Roberts was alone in the middle, wanting to uphold this Mississippi 15-week ban on abortions, but not go further than Roe. And then, of course, you had the three.
All right, pause it for 1 second. I just want to make sure this is academic at this point. But when you go to 15 weeks, you're basically you're overruling Roe.
Yes.
And you're overruling Casey. You're creating a new standard. All right, continue.
We don't want to do any of this. We don't want to disrupt abortion rights at all. So Roberts keeps trying. And it's interesting, Brianna, that not only did his work affect, you know, his efforts toward the two newest justices, Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett, but it had an effect on the others. The hard right justices became concerned that he could be successful. You know, the chief has himself switched votes in the past, and he has also been able to pick off justices on the far conservative side for a more of a moderate centrist decision in certain cases. So they became anxious about what he was up to. And the liberals, who had such a defeat this session, started to have some hope that maybe Roe would not be overturned completely. But then on May 2nd, when the draft of the opinion was released and everything went public, it made John Roberts' efforts all the harder, because he's a man who likes to work privately in secret, offering some concessions himself, seeking concessions for some sort of, you know, as I say, cross ideological compromise. And it went down to the wire, according to my sources. But in the end, he made no headway.
The first vote.
Pause it for one more second. Now, I want to make something clear, too. It's not just a question of what John Roberts likes to do. That's not what made it harder. What made it harder was now it is Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett, if they switch, have switched. And they know what happened to John Roberts in the ACA case. Look, normal human beings think, like, I've got this job forever. I'm just going to do what I think is right. Okay? But they're not normal human beings. Kavanaugh wanted to become a judge because he wanted to be able to walk around the country club, and he wanted to walk in the social circles he works in, and he wanted to be amongst these people as a Supreme Court justice. But if they're all shunning him as if he's Alan Dershowitz, you know, on the vineyard, he's bummed out. And the last thing he's going to do is switch, because Roberts in 2012 got hammered in the conservative press, including the Wall Street Journal, because of his switch on the ACA. Whoever leaked it in 2012, I bet you, 2013, also did this one.
Both Wall Street Journal leaks, yes?
Both Wall Street Journal leaks.
Yeah.
And there was a Wall Street Journal op-ed that also contained essentially a leak from inside the Supreme Court.
And those are the ecosystems they're operating in, too. It's very different from the ones we are, which is they're in country club territory and they're in Wall Street Journal. Like, that's as far left probably as they even engage in.
Right. And to be clear, like, these people just they don't want to be ostracized. They don't want to be the person who didn't overturn Roe v. Wade. Continue.
From your reporting was back in December. I mean, it was earlier that I think we had realized. You said it went down to the wire, though. Did either Kavanaugh or Amy Coney Barrett ever give any reason to anyone to believe that they were going to side with Roberts on this?
That's a great question, John. And I wanted to know, especially with Brett Kavanaugh, who often will, you know, sound ambivalent and send mixed signals, but in the end stick with the far right, to see just how much encouragement he might have given the chief. As I understand it, his vote was solid, but he never said that he wasn't going to listen to the chief. So the chief kept trying. The thing that happened that, as I said, really thwarted things was when it was clear to the public how Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Barrett had voted. It locked them in more than might have been expected at that point. And made it all the more difficult. And, you know, I do think that Brett Kavanaugh, despite what he said during his confirmation hearing, and despite the way that he has sort of really publicly wrung his hands on this issue, was likely never going to switch. He was probably...
All right.
She's got to be a little less obvious. The way that she talks about the chief and the way that she talks about the internal workings of his process.
She's got a really good source.
Exactly. It's pretty clear who that source is.
Yes. Now, I wonder if this reporting is coming out now because they're about to conclude the investigation. You know, like, I mean, this is the thing that that folks need to understand, like, when you hear these type of things, when things are reported in a certain way at a time, more often than not, it is not an accident. She's not going out there with that report, particularly if she's sourcing somebody very close to John Roberts, if not John Roberts herself. They are savvy enough to dictate when she makes this report. That's the way it works.
And they know who to go to as well.
They know who to go to. This is none of this stuff. It appears to us as if it is, random.
It's the news.
There is a relationship between people who are savvy, subjects of the news. That means people who are repeatedly subjects of the news and who have access to comms professionals and reporters. They have a language that they speak. They have essentially agreements that are very explicit. And so her making this report now is for a reason. And maybe it's either because A, they're about to announce the results of the investigation, or B, they're about to say, we're not going to announce the results of the investigation. We couldn't figure it out. One of those two things are happening. But there's one more part of what she said here that I think is really important for people to understand. And it came up with in my debate with Destiny about basically Supreme Court rulings. Because not unlike Citizens United, where there was a case that The plaintiff came in and asked the question, can we play ads for this documentary that we made about Hillary Clinton on TV within 60 days, I think it was, of an election, even though it's been funded? And, you know, will it not count as actual electioneering since we have established that we are a film company now, which they did? That was the narrow question. The plaintiffs never asked the question, can we get rid of all of the constraints on electioneering within 60 days in terms of donations? That question wasn't asked. But the Supreme Court decided we're going to answer that question too. And that's what happened with this Dobbs case. Roberts wanted to address this narrow question. Yes. Is 15 weeks okay? And he was trying to convince the others to do that. And if he had gotten two votes from the right, he would have negotiated with two votes on the left, too.
Because you talk about the savviness of someone like Roberts, who's often in the news. This is a part of his savviness, is the political game of the decisions that they're going to make. He understands that in order to implement the agenda of conservative justices, even if he sees himself as the, you know, a little bit separate from, say, the theocrats of Coney Barrett or Thomas, he wants to create a cushion for the political implications of their agenda, which was to cut into Roe significantly. He didn't want to do it all the way.
He's the chief justice, and his country club is in the history books,
right,
where he wants to be seen as someone who guided this, and you know, he wants to be read like, you know, the people talk about the Burger Court or the Warren Court. You know, like, he wants to be perceived that way, and that's what he's trying to do. But here is the kicker. People should understand this, just to get a sense of like what the right wing the justices will do here, because, you know, back in the day, I said, like, you know, you can pass. Bernie can get elected. This is in 2016. Bernie can get elected and somehow pass single-payer health care. But that doesn't mean the Supreme Court's not going to strike it down. This gives you a sense of just how far they're willing to go. And single-payer health care is not going to be, if it ever gets to the Supreme Court, is not going to have the same level of controversy as abortion. This is it. This is the most controversial issue that they could have ruled on, singular issue, at least in terms of the way that it's covered within our news.
And the chief just did not want to give up. He felt like this decision.
No, this is
so
the second
wrong.
Clip, right?
They did not even take this case to decide Roe v. Wade. They took this case just to decide whether a ban on 15 weeks of a ban on abortions at 15 weeks of pregnancy was constitutional. Mm-hmm. Because, as you probably remember, Roe v. Wade and the 1992 Planned Parenthood versus Casey had set up a firewall, essentially, yeah, of viability, that you could not, states could not interfere with a woman's right to abortion before a fetus would be viable to live outside the womb.
Yeah.
And that was at about 23 weeks.
Yeah, they really took an opportunity here. That leak, as you said, cementing things, is under internal investigation at the court. What's the latest on that investigation?
Okay, so, we're several months in, and law clerks and permanent employees have been asked to turn over electronic devices. They've continued with the search, but there's nobody's been caught, and there's just a lot of skepticism inside that despite how aggressive the investigation has gone, that they are not close to finding out who it is.
Yep.
You know, that draft was dated February 10th, and it became public through Politico when it published it on May 2nd. So, you know, it could have changed hands. It might not be just one single person. You don't know how strategic it was that someone did try to leak it. But you know what? In the end, it's the effect it had, it could have very much have been a very strategic leak, Brianna.
Okay.
Yeah, they got
right.
No. So they're not going to find anything.
They're not. I mean, there it is.
I thought I think that's one prediction I got right.
They know. They know. Roberts knows.
Yeah.
And that's why he's going and he's telling this story right now. I mean, it is.
Meaning basically the outcome of any investigation is not going to have the effect of telling his side of the story, essentially, because there won't be somebody to
meaning
to
there's
pinpoint.
Not going to be an outcome.
Right, right. So he's got to get out ahead of it and tell his side.
It's not so much he's got to get it. Well, yes, he's got to get it. He wants it on the record at this point what happened. And maybe it's a little bit of a threat, too, because he's mad. He's mad.
Yeah. I mean, this is just like politics within Versailles, as everybody else is just, you know, reaping the effects of Roe versus Wade. Yep. This is Real Housewives of the Supreme Court. This is what their concern is, as opposed to the material implications of it. It's office politics. It's silly.
Legacy stuff. The reality of all this, and I've also said this for years, and I have not stopped becoming amazed by it. You know, as back in the aughts, when Joe Lieberman would just get ticked off and decide, like, man, I'm not going to.
Joe Manchin's doing that right now.
Manchin's just, you know, like just a buck raking. But there is this, like, when you start to realize that in the Senate in particular and in the Supreme Court, Senate more than the Supreme Court. I mean, look, they horse trade in the Supreme Court, and it is at least. It's not, you know, what's going on there is not, it's not petty. It's Machiavellian what they did. He, by making it public, they locked him in and they knew it. And that's the way that works with political animals like that. In the Senate, you can have people not get health care, tens of millions of people not get health care just because one dude's pissed at another dude. Like literally.
Yeah. It's dying empire stuff.
And to give you an idea, just for folks, context on Joan Biskupic, she's a Supreme Court biographer. She's done biographies for Sandra Day O'Connor, Scalia, and Sotomayor. And her most recent is not on John Roberts. So, I'm sure the sourcing is. We can derive a little bit of understanding from that.
There you go. So this story is encouraging. Also, I'm having a good day in predictions today, aren't I? Federal government student loan servicing contractors have been instructed to hold off sending billing statements ahead of the August 31 deadline for ending the pandemic freeze on loan payments, giving companies little time to start loan collection processes if payments resume. This is the first step, I think, in the Biden administration, again, extending the moratorium to after the election.
That was my prediction.
Was it? It was my prediction,
too. Okay, whatever.
A clearinghouse for this.
I am pretty sure.
We do need a clearinghouse. Somebody's got to get on the prediction beat. But the bottom line is, this is what I think is going to happen. If the Democrats lose the Senate or the House or both, you're going to see Biden do some type of $10,000 debt relief. It may be means tested. It may not be. I hope it's not. I hope it's 50,000. But that would be my guess. If the Democrats retain both the House and the Senate, I think he just keeps punting until his legislative agendas are over. And that would be another 2 years of punts, is my guess.
That is, look, I understand that for their purposes, they're only worried about the suburban older voter who's disaffected by Trump. But man, if they really think they can ride out this midterms without activating young voters, that is a tightrope act.
There's no doubt in my mind they are not going to do this before the election.
Why not cancel 10,000 before the election and say, if we retain the House and the Senate, hopefully we can do more robust student debt reform and we can have a second bite of the apple. That would be a wonderful way to activate people, but they are uninterested in doing so.
I mean, they could come out and say, if we get two more senators, we can extend child tax credits for, you know, if you've got, half the country, and those are the voters that they want.
True, but the particular group of young people who are saddled with student loan debt, you can cancel it in a month, in 2 months, and say, we want to do more of this, but we need your help in November. I mean, that seems like smart politics.
I'll tell you what they're thinking is. Because they could also come out and say, we're going to do a moratorium, and if you vote for more Democrats, we'll do 10,000. I mean, he said it before the election.
I know, but if you give someone something positive to vote for and then give them another positive thing as a carrot in the end, it's more.
I can tell you what they're thinking. And I don't, you know, I disagree with it, but I can tell you what they're thinking. Right now, the only hope that they have for retaining both houses is a combination of abortion and of January 6th and just general disdain for Republicans.
Yeah.
Those three things have nothing to do with Joe Biden. And they want to keep it that way. I will be surprised if you see Joe Biden anywhere unless, like, gas prices fall below $4 and he's just going to be out there doing the stuff that he's doing.
They're doing a retread of hide Biden in the basement for the midterms. I mean, I guess that's the right way to go.
He's got 30% approval rate.
No, they should. They should. But they can also do a good thing instead of just be fearful of Republicans because of these reasons. They can also do a good thing. Those three things that you mentioned, all very actionable in terms of electoralism, but you also can, there's a whole different cohort here of the, how many people have student loan debt? Tens of
they're not
millions.
Comfortable winning that
45
way.
45 million?
Look at that whole group, right? There's more coming if you come to the polls in the fall. We wiped it out, and I'm saying 10,000 because they want to means test it after the elections.
You got to show me. Before you can, I'm not talking to me. You want to show them the Congress people who are screaming for this right now as they try and run for re-election.
It's a sickness in the party.
Well, I agree, but wait a second. Let's just on pure politics. If you can show me the Congress people who are calling for it because they think it's going to help them win in their district. You present that to Joe Biden, but it's not there. And Joe Biden is.
Then what's Dem leadership for? Leadership is what dictates this.
I agree.
No,
but if I'm Joe Biden and I believe what you're saying, I'm saving it for me. I'm saving it for 2024.
You have two bites at the apple. That's actually, you have any amount of bites at the apple if you want. I mean, gosh, I talk to you too much. I'm using this phrase, but like they. I mean, you could do 10,000 in increments, then 20,000, then 50,000, and then you activate that entire group. And they think that this is going to have some chilling effect on that group that they want to activate, the anti-Trump, never Trump, over 55, over 65 people. But I do not think that there's any connection to that.
I don't know if it's that cohort necessarily because, you know, those people have kids with student debt. I think that they are probably worried about the Republicans. This is my guess. Worried about the Republicans making this a Democrats have abandoned the working class argument.
Convoluted.
I don't know. I'm just telling you what I think.
I mean, that's tough because they have abandoned the working class.
And also never, you know, underestimate. I'm sure I'm sure parents like might say, well, my kids have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, too. Not every parent, but there might be some that they're worried about. I don't know. But
second thing I wanted to talk about, I guess it's really the 18th thing. There's a looming or a potential for looming U.S. railroad strike, not of commuter rail or I should say passenger rail, but freight rail. There's 115,000 railway freight workers. They have been without a contract for 2 years. Railroad freight companies, unsurprisingly, have made massive cuts to employees. I think it's how many? 45,000, like almost a third, not quite a third, maybe a quarter of the number of railway workers have been fired over the past couple of years.
29%.
And, but you should know, just in case you're worried, these railway companies are experiencing record profits. Surprise, surprise. Where is it? I had it right here. Oh, yeah, $183 billion in stock buybacks and dividends since 2010. They're extremely profitable. And part of that is because they're getting, they're having 115,000 people do the work of 170,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have to pay those people. About a month ago, I guess it was about a month ago, the members of this like United Railway Workers Union authorized a strike, just barely eked by with 99% approval to strike. They're ready for it. And then there is like this incredibly cumbersome statutory process for them to be able to strike. There has to be sort of like mediation, and there is, which has a like a 30-day cooling off period. And the only way that you, and then railway workers could strike in the absence of a presidential emergency board. Joe Biden stepped in and appointed a presidential emergency board that must look at the dispute and provide recommendations within a month.
And is a presidential emergency board under the Department of Labor?
I don't know who gets to appoint that. I would imagine it comes from the Department of Labor, or it could be under the under transportation.
Right.
Not 100% sure on this, to be honest with you. And but the bottom line is they're going to go through this, and if they can't come out with something that the railway workers feel they deserve, and frankly deserve, they're going to go on strike. And that strike will last, in my guess, like 24 hours tops.
Yeah.
Because it will shut down our supply lines, and it will be a mess.
I mean, if they don't get paid proportionally, rightfully so. I mean, I hope that it's under the Department of Labor's I guess, umbrella, because I have more faith in Marty Walsh than I do in Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, indeed. But we will see. We will keep you updated on that. And lastly, wanted to just talk about this story. Don't have too much to talk about it, but people should be aware of this. I teased this the other day. Axios has a two-part story at this point on Schedule F. If you recall, as in the waning days of the Trump administration, while Donald Trump was planning his coup, other members of the administration were planning to fire the final salvo in what Steve Bannon called, months after they got into the administration, the attempt to essentially degrade and destroy the administrative state. And what that means is, instead of having professionals work in agencies like the FDA, the EPA, the National Labor Relations Board, the USDA, I mean, on and on and on, Health and Human Services, most of the people who are working there have civil, have been hired through a civil service process, where their politics are not at all regarded. Simply their skill set. Are they scientists? Are they accountants? Are they, are they good at field testing? Whatever it is. And they get hired. That constitutes about, well, could be about up to 140,000, maybe more, people in those agencies. There's about 4,000 who are political appointees who run these agencies. But a lot of times, the people working at the agencies, they come in if they get somebody who is appointed who is inept or whose job is to just make the agency not function. We're going to try and appoint someone to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We're going to appoint someone to the EPA whose past experience with the EPA has just been suing them not to do their work, essentially. We're going to put somebody at FEMA who was just a buddy of mine from he knew how to party. He was a frat brother. He knew how to party, so I'll put him in charge of FEMA. And what he's good at is subcontracting, privatization, you know, that type of stuff. Then the employees there, they'll slow walk stuff sometimes. They will do their best to maintain the mission within the parameters that they're given, et cetera, et cetera. Republicans realize this is a problem because they can't fully destroy the administrative state and the regulatory state with civil service people there who have protections from firing.
And who are invested in the agency that they work for actually functioning as opposed to, you know, wreckers politically appointed.
Exactly. 100%. And so in the waning days of the Trump administration, Trump issued an executive order creating what is known as Schedule F. It was a new categorization for employees in the civil service, not all of them. It would create this new class of federal employees that are accepted from competitive service. It would remove career federal workers in, quote, confidential policy determining, policy making, or policy advocating jobs from what is known as the general schedule into this new classification where there are no civil service protections or virtually none. So they're all at-will employees. And so the idea was we're gonna classify them in such a way that we can fire them when we want. And then when we start our new administration in January of 2020, Trump was going to fire those people and fill them with cronies. And as soon as Biden got into office, he rescinded that order. But now the Republicans understand we have figured out the turnkey process in which we do this.
You have the blueprint.
And understand, this flows one way. So, and what I mean by that is, once you rid these people of civil service protections and you get them out of office, people who have had 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years experience in these jobs, they don't hang out for 4 years hoping that a Democrat will get elected, will fire all those people, and then rehire them. No, they go on to either work in the private sector in a job that, you know, the type of work they've been doing, or they find new careers. And also what happens is the people who are in school or in training positions or working in states thinking I'm going to get a job with the federal FDA or the federal EPA or the federal whatever it is, they change their career trajectories as well. And you begin to dry up. You know, it's like if you stop Major League Baseball tomorrow, suddenly a lot of those minor league teams are going to disappear because people are going to be like, I'm in here because I want to play in the majors.
Right.
And you'll still have people in the minors, but not nearly as many. And so this is not something that can be fixed with just the election of somebody 4 years from now. This would have a decade or more impact. And once it happens once, every Republican president knows they can come in and do it again. And so right now, apparently, according to the reporting, Republican think tanks, probably the Heritage Foundation, probably the Federalist, they probably all have been giving, probably the Heartland Institute, and on and on and on, based upon their issue sets, have identified 50,000 current employees to dismiss under the new authority that they will implement once they take office. And they know we don't need Trump to do this. The people who have come up with this have gone around to DeSantis. They've gone around to all the Republican candidates potential, and they get nothing but like, yeah, go for it. The quote that they have from there, former Trump administration official, it literally takes 5 minutes to reissue it. There was real value to issuing Schedule F because it turned it into a flip the switch thing for the next administration that wants to do it. That means everything is in place. Right now, the House is attempting to adopt an amendment in the annual defense authorization bill, which, of course, makes it more of a, more of a must vote than it's already perceived by them, that theoretically will prevent future administrations from reviving Schedule F. It is unclear whether that will make it into the final bill. And, you know, forces are marshaling to fight this legally. But understand one of the things that's coming. And they will figure out a way to do this. Mark my words. And the only hope is if it either gets into this bill, or I would prefer it, like, get it into the reconciliation bill is better, it seems to me. I don't know if it would cost any money, but we'll see. But people should keep an eye on this Schedule F, because this is going to be a big problem in 2 years.
Also, they're kind of doing this not – there's fewer barriers to this, but it's a similar thinking to how MAGA Trump Republicans want to stack the election booths with poll workers that are watching for Democratic ballot fraudulence and stuff like that. They want to deploy their extremists in ways that, you know, there were more barriers for this administrative state Schedule F stuff, but they're trying to do that on the local level with election workers as well, so we have to watch out for that.
Just got word that the CHIPS Plus legislation moves forward in the Senate by a vote of 64-32, so that's going to pass.
Bernie was the only, I think, Democratic caucus member to oppose it, probably for the reasons that we've discussed, which is that there's no guarantees that once we give this handout money to the semiconductor industry that we get any returns on investment as a country or as a people.
I wonder what the guarantees are that they're going to stay. Yes. That they're actually going to build these facilities and stay in the country. But that remains to be seen. All right. Let's head into the fun half of the program. We got stuff on, what do we got? We got...
we got a lot. We got J.D. Vance.
J.D. Vance. We will go over the Glenn Greenwald, I guess you could say it's an interview?
The grilling.
The tongue bath.
I just want to thank Glenn again.
Look, it means a lot. Oh, thanks, Glenn. Validated by a guy with a Pulitzer. So
you were a little nicer than I thought I'd even be to myself.
But, yeah, in many ways, we're the same, Glenn, you and I. Free Assange. We feel the same way about the legacy media, which just lies, as opposed to me, who makes well-meaning mistakes about Sandy Hook.
Meaningful mistakes about weather machines, Bilderberger Group.
Whether Obama's a Muslim, that's something that the elite media don't
want to talk about.
My kids' names.
Of course, Gen 6, you know, was inspired by a stolen election, but you can't do that. It's dangerous.
Strategically, I thought it was a mistake.
Look how nice guy I am.
We have J.D. Vance and, Dave Rubin. Mm-hmm. This Dave Rubin clip, this could be the one that actually, like, creates a drop of sympathy inside my body for him, honestly. Like,
what sympathy did you have? Well, we'll get into it then.
He has zero drops at this point. He might have one drop.
Exactly. Oh, like yeah. I thought a drop in a level, but like now you'll have a teardrop level like amount of sympathy. Yeah. Right. Okay, it's a little confusing, but that's fine.
Sorry, yeah. Like, I know like you have a tablespoon. Like, what was the size of like a Coke
spoon? Thimble.
Like a, yeah, no, a thimble may be too much.
A teardropper.
A teardropper. Yeah, an eyedropper.
Like you're doing a COVID test or something.
Exactly. But not six.
Just or
one.
Three.
Just one.
Just one.
I really do think that like it's going to be a race to do his life story. Well, maybe as a short story. It would be a short story. But it's not terribly, but the twists and turns.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. Oh, my God. Dim Tool was endorsing Schedule F as a reason to vote for Trump on Twitter. You didn't see it. Oh, my God. I can't keep up with the stupidity. All right. 646-257-3920 is the number. Also, don't forget, it's your support that makes this show possible. When you become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com, you not only get the free show, free of commercials. Of course, today we didn't have any. But you also allow this show to survive and thrive and get access to the fun half. So why wouldn't you do it? And if you can't afford it, send us an email at majorityreports@gmail.com. Have a little patience. We're behind right now on some of these, but we will get to it. Just put into the subject line fun half, and I promise you we'll get there. I know people have been like, wait, I didn't hear back from you. I emailed you 3 weeks ago. Yes, sometimes that's our lag time. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. I know a bunch of you tried it when we had that big MR25 sale, but go in. You will love this coffee, and you can get the Majority Report blend. And if there's anybody out there who still appreciates Marc Maron, which I know is fewer and fewer, you can get the WTF blend. Check it out. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Wednesday evening, we'll be having Matt Christman of Trapo Trap House and Hell of Presidents on to talk about Joe Brandon, the post-Bernie left, and also...
Is he still in L.A.?
I don't know where he's at, actually. Oh. I don't know if he was... I don't know where he's at. He might be in Iceland, for all I know. But we are going to be talking also about his response to Jordan Peterson saying there is an existential weight put on especially young men by history, and how Matt Christman responds to that weight as somebody who's passionate about history. So patreon.com/leftreckoning to get the post game, but that's tomorrow at 8 Eastern on the Left Reckoning YouTube channel.
All right, folks, see you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Boo.
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it.
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7-8?
Yes.
Me? Is it?
Yes.
Is it me?
It is you.
Is it me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start life.
Who libertarians?
They're so stupid though. Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him!
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-3551. 1 half. 3 8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400, $1,900.
$3 trillion sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
Love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock. We're already late, and the guy's being a dick. So screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.